I'm so fucking angry, dude.
Oh.
Oof. Oh, okay. Man. All right. Okay, let's go. Let's go. Let's get
into
this.
It.
Let's go.
Let's get into it. Let's do it. Oh, man. I really should have thought about a plan of how I wanted to approach this, but I'm a bit too upset to focus on something like that, making notes. All my note is just as I'm angry.
It's just, ah! Okay.
it's just a bit of ah. So I've come a long way. Do you remember Divergence?
I do.
I have come a long way since then, and I have separated myself from the, you know, I've separated my inner world from the outer world of others, and you know, I still struggle sometimes. I care a lot, and it makes it hard. But I don't have as many episodes, literally and figuratively, where I'm troubled by other people's actions or inactions. But I bring that up because the person I was talking about at that time has made me very upset. Someone I used to call a friend.
Okay.
Man. Have you ever had a person that you used to call a friend?
Oh, sure.
I mean, yeah. and like you thought they were very close, and yeah. or they were very close, and things had to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't feel like, I mean, I haven't had that many people that I've called a good friend. Mm. And so I haven't lost that many people. And so this is kind of new territory for me.
Okay. How much do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to. I'm not going to use his name, but
no.
Like,
I know.
This. you know.
I think I know.
Yeah. Also, the listeners know. I've known this guy for like 5 years now. He was, well, man, what's so, okay. So yeah, he lived, where to even start? Oh man. He's been living with us for the past 6 months and he just moved out, and good riddance.
Ooh, spicy.
Since then, we've talked with friends about this friend, and new things have come to light that have surprised me. Like I was already mad, and then there's like just extra things. Like I'm not basing my madness off of not rumor, but
yeah.
You know what I mean. But yeah, this guy was going to be the officiant at our wedding. He was pick number two after you.
No.
And a week before our wedding, he got COVID. And it turns out, and so we had to, we had a runner-up officiant. And so everything went off without a hitch. But it's kind of good that happened, because it turns out this person very likely never became an officiant, even though he had been asked to do so months prior.
He'd
put it off and put it off and never got to it, and was given money to do it multiple times.
Oh, no.
Like three or four times, and still never did it. So we could have just turned up at our wedding day and not been able to
have any official...
Yeah. Which, you know, it's whatever, symbolic and stuff, but it's real. So that's just something I've learned recently.
So it might have been a strategic COVID.
Yeah, well, it sounds like his now ex-wife gave it to him, and it was legit COVID.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
Just kind of lucky for us.
Yeah,
in a couple ways. Yeah. I mean, not only could he have failed, but then now we don't have this person as our officiant, so it's like kind of double good. Yeah, we worked together for a while. He was employed when I first met him, and then he wasn't employed. His story was that he quit. I don't know if that's true or not. I can't really trust anything that he said. He portrayed his job as one thing, that he was kind of like managing people and stuff, but then the things that he actually did don't line up with that, and it was way more like he was a glorified gas station attendant. Anyways, that's beside the point. He was unemployed for a while, and his wife was sick of it, and then I was sick and needed help, and the opportunity struck, so we started working together, and that was great. I needed that. And yeah, that helped me get through an extremely tough time. And I'm super grateful for that. And this guy kind of ran with that gratitude for as long as he could. 2 years ago.
Are we saying that you feel taken advantage of?
Oh,
and by the way, listener, I'm not prompting Brendan with questions to which I know the answer. I don't. I'm coming to this fresh.
Yeah. I know. I appreciate it too. Actually, I love your questions, dude. They really get me to think in a different way, and I really love it. I don't think that he was doing almost anything consciously. Mm-hmm. I don't think that he was malicious, and I don't think that he was what's the opposite of malicious? Gracious?
Malicious. Yeah, sure.
Malicious.
Yeah.
I kind of think that there's just nothing there.
Okay.
I mean, you know, we did little video waffles, as we called them, for a while, and I mean, you were exposed to the content of his videos. There wasn't a lot there. I don't know if you feel the same way or not.
I don't remember there being a lot there. But it's not
when they actually up. When they actually came through and he actually did one.
Oh, sure.
It was like just looking around at tulips and not saying anything, or just in his backyard and just like. Yeah, well, today was a day, and then that was about it. Anyways, that was what he was like all the time. So he helped me out, and he didn't make me anything. I trusted him because of, you know, I'm quick to trust, and nothing's been giving me a reason why I shouldn't. And so 2 years ago, we were working together on a project, and Margaret and I wanted to come take a vacation and come see you and the glorious areas around you. And don't want to use the wrong location terms and stuff like I did last time.
Well, you came to see Europe as a separate part of your visit.
I did. I'm just playing around. I left him with work to do while I was away. And this happened right before and right after. Wait. Yeah, this happened right before or as the lawsuit was starting and right before the car accidents happened. It was a time. in my life.
Yes, what has been referred to in Latin as an annus, horribilis. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Annus horribilis.
A horrible year.
Annus horribilis. Yes.
Yes. Yes. A lot of learning lessons. So while I was away, he was clocking his time every day, sending me his timesheet, and I was paying him and giving me no indication of any issues or anything like that. And then I come back and see that during the 5 weeks I was away, about a week's worth of work was done.
No, no.
And when I asked him about it, he was like, yeah, I don't know. That was literally like the extent I could get out of him. Was like, I don't know what happened. He was there every day because I knew the clients told me that. But I couldn't charge the clients for that time. So I had to write off $8,000 on top of, you know, everything else going on. It was a very difficult time.
Yeah.
And so that made me very upset, but I was still kind of in a bind, and we kind of just proceeded for a while, and then I made some changes at that point. And I talked, he was still married at the time, and I told him and his wife that I need to talk. Like, this something's got to change. This is crazy. So we all sat down and had a conversation, and his wife was a part of the friend group. Like, it wasn't just like, I'm just going to go tell your wife. It was like, all right, we gotta get together and figure out a solution here. So I went and talked to them and, informed her what was going on, trying to find some solutions and whatever. And also letting her know, like, hey, I've kind of, I hear you, like, with the things that you've said, I hear you.
Is that in a like, I'm piecing two and two together kind of, I'm hearing you?
Yeah, yeah, like, because she had said things, she had been complaining about his behavior.
Sure.
And he had always portrayed things in a way that was like his side made sense in a way of what he was explaining. And it's like, oh, you know, this person is talking about me or whatever. And like, this thing is being said, but it's really like this or whatever. And so he'd always kind of have an excuse or a deflection, and it was easy to just accept it and move on because I wanted to. I didn't want to believe otherwise. And so then I changed how I worked together with him, and I'm like, okay, I have got a fixed budget for how much I can give you, and I need these things done. Are you willing to do that? Yeah. Okay, we can proceed. And then and that worked for us for a while. We did take a break because I wanted him to get licensed, and he said he would, and he's going to get money from his parents to do it, and he was going to do it by the first of the year. And it just, like the officiantness,
yep.
It never happened. Yes. It was not very efficient.
I found it. I hit the right button at the right time.
Right button. Okay, so that's most of the. So and then yeah, and then we just on and off kept working together depending on the project. And on top of that, I doing my divergence of it all. I really cared about this guy kind of stepping up and adulting and improving, and started a little book club with him and another friend, reading Men's Work by Connor Beaton and trying to go through all the steps where we look at our shadow and address our father wound and mother wound and do these exercises and everything that's in the book, and we do it together. And he would, the intention was that we would read a chapter, and then there'd be a little exercise, and we'd do the exercise right there, and then we'd share it with each other as much as we felt comfortable. You know, it was never forced. And I would do that, and the other guy would do that, but this guy would read, but not do the assignment.
He and literally like, oh. wasn't doing the work, Brendan.
He was not doing the work.
He was not doing the work.
And he said, "Oh yeah, I'll do it at home, and I'll come back next week." And it never came. He never came with the assignment done. And you know, obviously, it was very frustrating. It was very frustrating for me. I think it was frustrating for the other guy, but he was kind of he didn't have as much invested. And then we finished that book, and we moved on to another one, and it was less work to do. It was mostly just reading, but it was hard to get it to keep going. We kept meeting, and we were like a little friend group that would meet every week. God, I'm so mad. So during this time, the whole time I've known him, he's lived in this apartment that has had massive amounts of mold in it, just caking the walls, just... It was insane. And I told him often, like, you got to move out of that apartment for your health, for your wife's health, for your sanity and other things. And I blamed, and this, oh man, I blamed a lot of his behavior on the mold because it fit sure. right in line with how I acted when I was around mold, mm-hmm. what I've read about mold. It all made a lot of sense. And honestly, still, I'm not writing that off. Because of what we'll get to in a minute. I was trying to get him out of the mold. And also, like, he would tell stories about his marriage. And his marriage, the stories that he would tell reminded me so much of my previous marriage. And how things just weren't working between those two people. And it wasn't a good fit. And it's fine to move on. And he kept trying and trying. Well, he kept saying that he wanted to stay in the relationship. And, you know, I get it very much. Eventually, the relationship came to a close. And we offered him a place to stay as a transition. So he came and lived with us. He was with us for about 6 months. And then during that time, it became clear that he could not stay anymore. And we realized a lot of the things that his ex-wife were saying were very accurate about him. And that the stories that he would tell were tall tales or excuses or straight up lies. On his way out, when he moved out, he moved like a lot of his stuff from his apartment into a storage locker nearby, and then just like the basic essentials he brought to our house. But on his way out, he's moving back to Minnesota from Oregon, so a big multiple states away trip. It'd be very difficult to kind of move life taking a plane and having to ship everything. So he decided to take a train instead so he could take more with him. He could take like 6 large bags instead of like 2. And then so his plan was to pare down all of his belongings, and he decided to do that in a way where he brought everything from the storage unit back to our place. And on the surface of it, that makes sense.
You can go see where this might be going.
Oh, man.
Or maybe not, but yeah.
You probably do. He opened up all of his stuff and sorted through everything. And there's so much mold in all of his stuff. He kept it with him. He didn't get rid of all of his soft things. He didn't clean anything. And since in the past 2 weeks, I have found mold in 15 different places in my house.
Oh.
That I have never found mold in before. Yeah. And we're talking about on the vinyl of windows, on a glass of still water in the water reservoir of my water pick, my water flosser, in three different pairs of shoes. And I've had air purifiers running constantly since he started opening that stuff up. And I'm like, this smells bad, dude. Like, what the fuck is going on? So I put the air purifiers on and I check it.
What was his response to that?
He thought, at first, I was like, it smells bad in here. He's like, yeah, I noticed that too. Is it, did a cat make a mess? And I'm like, no, dude, you opened up your stuff. It smells like human shit and mold. And he's like, huh, really? He'd do this all the time. He's like, really? Like something had never occurred to him. And he's like, oh yeah, I kind of wondered that actually when I opened up a box and it was like really dusty and particles were flying everywhere. And I was like, huh, I wonder what that is. Maybe a cat peed on it and it crystallized. And then I opened up the box and it went everywhere. And it's like, dude, that's not how cat pee works. Cat pee gets on something and then it smells bad. It doesn't crystallize and then become airborne when you open a box. This is nuts. He was like, yeah, I was wondering what that was. I was like, dude, okay. This is a person who, like, I hired him to be for physical labor while I couldn't do it because I was taking hardcore medications that had me just lifeless on the floor for months. And he, you know, was in person witnessing that, working around my house while I was just stuck on the floor of my house and hearing me while I was in the bathroom taking a shower using a powered sinus irrigation rinse and trying to more or less waterboard myself to get all this mold out of my sinuses. And like, he knew what I went through and he knew about the problem. He was very aware of the mold issue that I've had and the thoughtlessness of bringing, you know, of no awareness of what his stuff may contain, where it's been, what I've said to him for years. I was not expecting him to bring all of his stuff into our house. And I have the foresight to say, hey, don't do that if you're going to. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that that was my responsibility.
I mean, I liken this to, not mutual friend, but sort of friend of the show of this parish, is someone that's managed to have dodged COVID for, I guess, 4.5 years, and was, I would say, terrified of getting it. To the point where their life was being restricted quite significantly. Now, when someone tells you that they are immunocompromised or that what they know about a particular condition means that if they're exposed to something, that could have an outsized effect on them, which is maybe different from someone else or whatever. And if you know that and if you pay attention, then you make allowances or you make choices to make sure that you can protect that person.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a lot.
Yeah.
So given what he has known, then yeah, being so careless and thoughtless unconscionable.
Over the past 2 weeks, I've had so much like craving for like overeating and sugar, which is just my my normal go-to when I'm exposed to these toxins, and not just the cravings, but like unable to not abide them. Like,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
just,
yeah, yep.
I am just stuffing my face. I got candy and ate candy. Like, that's not something I do anymore, but mm-hmm. I had to. It's insane. And I'm like, I'm baking cakes and, I'm needing to escape. And also in between like fucking cleaning so much of my, like just constantly, the past 2 weeks, I've just been cleaning the house so much, not like compulsively, but I'm just like, oh my God, there's more. It's all over the bathroom ceiling. Holy shit. It's over here. It's on the baseboards. It's in these shoes and this hat. So I put the air purifiers out and I checked them. I checked the filters because I'm like, maybe I should, you know, put the cat hair and stuff in there or whatever. I'll clean that out. On two out of the three of them, they were caked. The pre-filters were caked with mold. And so I'm like thinking to myself, like, for one, it was just like, oh my God, it's just, there's more. And one of the pre-filters was like, it's like this 360 intake of air. And so they had this wide filter all the way around the circle. And the whole thing, front and back of the filter, was just blue and green. And it's supposed to be black. And it's, I'm just thinking to myself, like, is this just like spreading around mycotoxins throughout my whole house with this high powered fan? Like, cause like, are the air purifiers making my air quality worse? Like, what's, and I'm super paranoid from the mold, not only the idea of it, but the actual product of it itself causes paranoia. So I'm like, I can't trust anything. And so today, after this recording, I'm going to be loading up nearly all of our soft belongings, pillows, blankets, couch, chair, other furniture, to take to the dump, because we have to purge a lot of our, like, it's not enough that this guy got divorced and had to move state, so he had to pare down all of his belongings, but he's got to, you know, bring us down with them. We gotta like, we already wanted to kind of get a new set of things, and so he's like just speeding up the timeline, but also it's like in a very unhealthy way and scary way, and not on our terms. He paid 3 of the 6 months' rent that he promised to pay. I lent him my phone, my previous iPhone, so that he could communicate with me at work, because his phone was broken and I didn't have reliable communication with him, and he was broke, I thought. So I lent him my phone with a written agreement that he would give it back to me in the same condition. He broke it, and then I'm just like, fuck, fine, whatever, just keep it. And he didn't really ever say thank you. Like, I know, like, I'm not doing this for a thank you.
No, it doesn't. I forget that. Like, it's,
you know what I mean.
Something you do. But, like, yeah.
I let him know while he was in the marriage, like, hey, man, you know, I can see things are rocky. You know, if you need a place to crash, I'm here for you, bro. Like, I got you. And we did. We had him. And he came and he stayed. And like, we gave him food, like, not just from our house, but, like, I buy him dinners and lunch. I bought him lunch at his favorite food cart on the way to the train station. And I gave him a ride to the train station so that he could not have to take all of his bags on the bus to get there, and a bunch of other things like that throughout the whole time. And he's like, yeah, thanks for the ride, man. And he didn't thank me for the
the months,
the months, yeah, or the really nice meal I gave him. He didn't even acknowledge that I bought. The comment he made while we were eating was like, "Well, I guess I have to find some new places to eat in Minnesota." What is going on in there?
Got to find some new friends to take advantage of.
And I know of a story that he's told that when he was a child, somehow he, like, I don't know if he fell or something, but like a piece of metal penetrated his brain and caused a massive issue. And it, like, I wonder if that has changed his capacity for anything. Probably, I would assume metal penetrating the brain would change something. And he's got, you know, medicated depression, unmedicated ADHD, and, you know, so he's got things going on. And so I'm like, you know, oh man, I feel for you. Doesn't change the fact that the way he treats people and me hurts a lot. And so I haven't and I wouldn't ever take it out on him because I do feel for him. But man, does all this really hurt? And so another thing that came out after, like I told you the story about the money that he took while we were away, it turns out that his wife never saw that money. He had told her that I wasn't paying him until I got back. And so he was just taking that money, lying to his wife, and making things harder in their situation by not contributing to rent and other bills that he was supposed to contribute to. And then so she was blown away when I came and was like, yeah, you took all this money and you didn't do any work. And she was kind of stunned silent. So, I'm really upset that that he left in the way he did and was so thoughtless. And I sent him a text. I was like, hey, you know, you're about to move out. I just want to get some things down and spoken. So I'm just going to let you know, I'm not going to ask you for the rent that you didn't pay. I'm not going to ask for my phone back or for you to replace it or pay me for it. And anything you know, the things that you leave behind, you're not able to pack or whatever, or sell before you go. I'm just going to assume that you're going to release ownership of, and I will take them. And when I said that, I was thinking the lawn furniture that he had, a bike and like a dresser and some of these larger items that, yeah, he didn't really have time to list and sell or try to get rid of or whatever. And what I was not expecting is for him to just leave a bunch of his shit, like not feces, but just
well
his stuff.
There was
multiple bins of just things and also not bins of things, just his like socks left around and things kind of not all over the place, but in multiple areas that I had to, you know, collect and dispose of, some moldy, some not. And yeah, I just feel like I was just kind of left with a really dirty house. Like he didn't clean up after himself kind of thing. Like it's just kind of like, oh yeah. Okay, cool. I'll just leave then. And when I sent him that text, his response was completely fair. That's not me characterizing his text. His text was...
Right, yeah.
That's completely fair. And my thought was... I didn't tell him this. But my reaction was... I think you mistyped that text.
Okay.
Because I think you mean to say that's incredibly generous. Like we're talking about like $2,000 and on top of everything else from the past. Like we're just talking about right now since you've been living here.
That's fair. It's like
it has the tone of, you know, I owe you some stuff, you owe me some stuff.
Exactly.
You know, let's call it quits. That's fair. Like, that's what you say when there's an amicable split and, like, you're just like, yeah, we'll just, you know, divide up the check.
Yeah.
Not when you're several.
I mean, sure, there's a decently working bicycle, which, yeah, maybe $100. There's two lawn chairs and a table, like, okay, maybe another $100 I could get, you know, for next door or whatever. And a dresser, which I'm trying to get rid of and people don't want. and then a whole bunch of garbage I have to deal with. Yeah, it's not evens. This is not even.
No.
All right, I think that's most of it. I'm just so mad, dude. I sent his dad a text. I got his dad came.
You
to
told
help
on him.
Him. I didn't.
You told on him to his dad.
I didn't tell on him. Not explicitly. I didn't tell him everything. But I got his dad's contact information when he came to visit to help him move out after the divorce, and his dad thanked me for helping him have a place and with a job and stuff. He thanked me more than the mm-hmm. guy ever did. Mm-hmm. And so I sent him a little warning text because this was like a day and a half, 2 days after he'd left, and I was cleaning up so much mold in my place, and I'm like, I gotta send this guy a warning. The guy took a trip up to his sister's house in Tacoma in Washington, and then I was gonna stay there for a couple of days and then move on to his parents' house. And so it was gonna be, you know, I knew it was gonna be some time before he got there, and I didn't have his sister's contact information, and he was already there, so it's like, sorry, you've got mold now. Hope you find it. But I could at least warn his dad and mom. And so I let them know. I'm like, hey, this is the situation. He's got a bunch of mold on his stuff from his apartment. And I highly recommend that you throw away everything soft of his, not let it into your house, and wash everything that's hard. And because it's everywhere. And he replied saying, thanks for the warning and thanks for all my help. And that was nice to get acknowledged again. So hopefully it takes that advice. I have no idea. People don't usually react around mold the way that I hope that they would. But yeah, we'll see. That's up for them.
Yeah, I think most people, it's just like that's it's an inconvenience, or mm-hmm. it's a stinky thing, or it's a that'll probably wash off kind of thing.
Yeah. So yeah.
Oh,
thanks for listening.
I am sorry, my dude. That's some rough business.
Yeah.
So, what's next?
Taking a bunch of stuff to the dump, and maybe enacting a little impromptu rage room with some of the things, and I can just throw it aggressively off of my truck. Continuing to clean the house and keep cleaning until I'm just really, really sure that everything is gone, and before we bring anything back into the house, like new furniture or stuff. And trying to take these life lessons of
not necessarily. I don't know, man. What do you learn from something like this, you know?
Well, there were signs. There were signs that I ignored. I tried to not write off, but just like, you know, because at a certain point, you know, after the $8,000 loss, and through many different, like, working together was so hard. Like, I'm incredibly grateful and thankful that he was there and I had somebody to be able to do the manual labor while I couldn't. But the dude could not learn. He would never put a tool away. It would be placed in the middle of the floor or on another tool, or worst, on the rungs of a ladder.
Oh, no.
Like,
yeah.
This...
Yeah.
It's the basics, the wrong place to put it. Second, sure. It makes the thing that you're trying to use unusable. Third, it's dangerous. Ladders are the number one injury-causing thing in construction. Like, more electricians die from ladders than they do from getting electrocuted.
Damn, we should outlaw ladders.
It's just also maddeningly inconvenient. It's just so, like, this is just not a place for tools to be. There's a box. There's actually a specific spot for every tool. Every tool has a place. And he would, when I did finally get him to put a tool back in this place, then he'd forget where that place was. He'd forget he put the tool back, and he's like, I just had the tool. And he would look around for 15 minutes trying to find a tool that he'd put back in the proper place. And then he would complain to me like, oh man, I put it away. Now that's why I couldn't find it. The fuck? And he would do, like, we'd do the same things over and over again. We'd do drywall over and over again. We'd do flooring over and over again. Like, we'd do the same tasks. And we'd always do it the same way. It's not like we were experimenting with new ways to optimize or whatever. I kind of figured it out over the past 20 years. And I'm like, no, this is the way.
Oh, I love spicy Brendan.
This is the way that we do it. I'm only teaching you one way. We're not experimenting. And it's like, oh, no, I'm going to mix these two drywall compounds together instead of just using one as the directions say to use it. I'm like, no, you don't need to do that. We can just actually just mix it the way it's supposed to be. But yeah, we do the proper procedure and we keep doing it. And so I'm thinking, all right, this guy's got it. We always do it the same way.
Yeah.
He's got it, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I leave him on the job site. I go get materials or I take a day off because I've got a doctor's appointment or whatever, you know, like, and he's able to work. So he's like, yeah, I'll just go work and continue. And sometimes it'd be fine. A lot of times he would do something completely different than he had done every other time. We have one specific drywall sander for walls. So we applied the drywall topping to walls. You got to sand it down so that it takes all the way the peaks and trowel marks. And this drywall sander is a really wide. It's got like a 9-inch sanding pad, and it's got a vacuum attachment that goes all the way around it, so it collects all out of the dust into this high-powered vacuum that's specifically made for drywall because it has a filter in it that reverses every 20 seconds, so it knocks out all the dust from the filter and self-cleans. So it's a whole big system. It costs like $1,500, and it's worth it. It works really well. It's the only thing we use. It's the only thing I've ever shown him to use. The last job that we were doing, left him for a day to sand the drywall. It's a dummy task. It's the bottom of what we do.
Yeah, I'm feeling like
it's the most
simple.
The way
you're describing it, I could probably do it.
It's the most simple thing that we do.
Yeah.
You kind of can't fuck it up, I thought. The hardest part is like making sure you pick the right grit of sandpaper. Like, as long as you can read numbers and remember that you start low and work your way high, that's kind of like... But what happened is I left him for a day to just sand, expecting to come back to the job site with sanded walls and clean floors.
But you didn't get that, did you, Brendan?
Sorry, Mark.
I'm having fun here, but like,
no, please.
No, this sucks.
We're doing a podcast. It's for entertainment value. So, like, no, proceed. No, I did not, Mark. Partially sanded walls and drywall dust fucking everywhere.
everywhere!
Inside the client's home. Like, the client had to close the door between the laundry room and the rest of the house, and they put, like, a towel underneath the door because so much drywall dust was entering into their house from just air movement. And it was like, they didn't clean. They just kind of quickly rushed, like, oh, I can see a bunch of drywall dust. They just tossed a towel in. They probably had to go on with their date. And I opened the door at some point later, and I see all the dust has, like, protruded into the house, and, like, it wasn't little. And then there's an attached storage area that we've had masked off and tried to kept clean through the entire thing. That was opened up for some reason, I don't know. And there's drywall dust on all of their shit. All these boxes and all these trinkets and just things that are in the storage area. Like, sure, a lot of it is covered with a box, but then the box is covered with drywall dust. That's fucking bad. That's bad customer service. That's bad, like, thoughtfulness. It's unthoughtfulness. Thoughtlessness. That's the word for it. And I'm like, what? I'm thinking to myself, why did, like, I there's so much drywall dust. I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking the only thing that he could have done is hand sanded. He took a sanding brick to the walls and was hand sanding it the whole time, which waves the dust around. It gets everywhere. It's all over the floor. And I'm like, so I go to him, I'm like, why?
What? All in his lungs, because I'm sure, you know, if you're thinking about that, you're probably not thinking about, okay.
I ask him, why didn't you use the drywall sander like we always do? Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, no, I did use it, but we didn't have the right vacuum hose. So I had to use a different vacuum hose, and it just wasn't attaching properly. So I just didn't use the vacuum hose. So I just sanded it with the sander. And I'm like, well, for one, the sanding hose is in the box with all the sandpaper. If you were using the proper sandpaper, you would have seen the hose because it's on top. It's all in the same box. You can't miss it. What sandpaper did you use? None? Or just whatever was left on there from a previous job, so it's not new? It's not what you should use? Second, if the tool isn't there, don't use it. Like, if not all the parts are like, we can come back another day or text me so I can go grab it or tell you where it is. I'm not unreachable. I'm not even able to use words properly. I'm so upset.
Guys, he's not unreachable, okay?
Title.
So angry. This, oh my god, I'm frightened. I've never seen you this incensed.
I'm really upset.
Yeah. Oh, my dude. Do you want me to go rough him up? You want me to go beat him up? Because I'll fucking fly to Minnesota.
Oh yeah. Oh man.
No one hurts my Brendan.
A lot of people do, actually. No, not a lot of people, just a couple. Yeah, and that's not an isolated incident at work. Like, that's just all the time. I don't know why I know why I put up with it, but also I don't know why I put up with it. And, you know, like, fucking, I've been saying this for a long time, and it's so fucking true. Good work is hard to find. Good help is hard to find.
Oh god, yeah.
And
it's surprising, isn't it?
It's really, like, it's so sad
because you don't think about your standard of work as being like, you just think, well, that's the standard of work.
100%. I could not agree more. I'm just like,
yeah, it's like,
I'm not.
This is the bare minimum.
I got a review from a recent client, and they were like, you know, this guy, you know, like what did they say? They were on time with the projection of when they said they were going to finish, and they were at budget. And it's like, okay, so I called my shot and I made it. and this was like 5 stars. Like they did what they said they were going to do at the price that they said they were going to do. 5 stars. And I'm like,
that's a searing indictment of
I'm just casually walking over this bar that's on the floor. Like, this is ridiculous. This is, I try to do good work. I care about that. But like, I'm getting praised for the minimum things that I don't even think about because the bar is so low. It is that on its own, it makes me so mad about my industry, about humanity, that there's just not a lot of care. And there's so much grift.
Oh.
And so, yeah, so I've had, you know, I've had different people help me at different times. And, you know, the good help doesn't want to stay because they're good enough to go do other things and not work under me. And the bad work doesn't show up either because they fucking suck. They can't communicate. They can't show up on time. They can't do a good job while they're here.
Yeah, what we hope for and we never seem to get is the idea of the apprentice.
That's
you
what
know,
I
you
wanted.
Want that sort of young young buck.
Yes.
Who's like, they're keen to learn, they want to do really good work, and it's like, come here, let me take you under my wing. Yes. And sure, you'll make some mistakes, but we'll learn.
Yeah.
And like,
I don't care if you make mistakes.
We'll grow together.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's part of it.
Yeah. It's a romantic ideal. And it doesn't feel like it exists anymore because
I mean, I did it.
Everybody wants to be influencers.
Yeah. But I did it. It's like, come on, be me from a couple years ago.
Yeah. You are rarer than you think.
Oh, I know. And, so this guy, he kept showing up. So, like, that's why I kept him around. Because.
Yeah.
There was at least no, there was some
bad help is better than no help.
Sometimes, not always.
No. As soon as I said that, I was like, "Do I believe that?
Do I believe what I just said?"
No, I'm not sure I do. I don't stand by that.
Sometimes bad help is counterproductive.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah. when we needed this guy to move out. He was looking around at different options, and one of the options he was kind of thinking about or was told that might be an option is a previous client that we actually did a bathroom remodel for together.
Okay.
And because they were friends before clients, and that idea was proposed to the person our age that lived there, and then they talked to their dad. And the dad was like, no, that is not happening. Because that guy knew the character of this person and was like, I do not want them in my room.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. They knew them a little bit from years prior, but then they were exposed to a lot more of him during the remodel and were not happy.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Did that ever blow back on you?
Not yet. I mean, that job. Oh boy, that was a crazy experience. It's two parents and their daughter. Daughter's a good friend of Margaret. They've been like best friends for a long time. She's going through her own massive, difficult health journey as well, and has been. Battling a lot of pain, a lot of fatigue, a lot of inability to do anything. And as I am wont to do, I could see myself in that situation and like providing like different suggestions at different points of what could be done. And I'm interacting with this family both in terms of I am the husband of a family friend, and I'm a remodeler. And I was kind of in multiple positions in here, and it was confusing. It was a weird time for me. I'm still in my shit and not doing well. I'm on medications that's making me act funny and other things. And I had internal work to do still. So I wasn't at my best. But then there was at one point, because the parents were kind of losing their shit around the daughter and how incapable she was of doing things.
Oof.
And at one point, the mother lost her shit. And while the daughter is laying on the floor crying and wailing and unable to stand up, the mother says, "You're being hysterical." And I snapped. I'm so surprised I did not get fired. Just right there on the spot. I'm like, I immediately say, "What the fuck did you just say to your daughter? Do you know the context and history of that word? Like, what makes you think that would be a good thing to say? She's lying on the floor crying. She's in pain. She's not faking it. She's been this way for years. She's hurting. She needs her mother." I don't regret what I said. I did say the right thing, but it was also like, I was surprised it was coming out of me too. Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, that was a time in my life.
Wow.
That happened. I made that friend really happy with me, because she needed somebody to speak up for her.
To advocate.
And she got it in that moment. She's really grateful for that and still talks about it now. So it helped a little bit in the short term. Her mom did turn around and start actually kind of giving a shit more. And then things kind of tumbled back down. And then, I don't know, they've gone up and down a lot, but that's not the topic of this podcast. The topic of this podcast is my anger. How long have we been talking? I don't even know. I don't get the,
just 58 minutes.
How are you doing, man? What's with you? You got 2 minutes. Sorry, I filibustered this one. I just...
Don't you dare. No, no, no.
Oh, my God, dude.
Let's clean the palate. Cleanse the palate.
Yeah, you got any jokes for me? I always give you jokes. Do you have a good joke for me?
I haven't got jokes, but I did have an interesting multi-layered dream last night in which I went to heaven and it was awful.
Oh, no. Tell me more.
So I died.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And went up to the good place, and all the stuff just made me anxious.
Aww.
And I felt unworthy. Not necessarily unworthy, but like I shouldn't be there. Like the only abiding memory I have is something about like conjuring a chair to sit down and the chair being like really uncomfortable. And I'm like, this is supposed to be paradise. And this chair's really uncomfortable and painful, and I feel really restricted. And that's the one little snapshot that I can recall. Yeah. But what was so interesting, I thought, is that I woke up from that, I was going to try and do a pullback and reveal. I can't, because it won't make any sense. It would have if I hadn't have said this happened last night. But basically, it was a dream within a dream. So within the dream, it was the weekend. So I'd had a weekend, and I was telling people, like on the Saturday or the Sunday, I'm pretty sure I died.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure I had a death experience. And people were like, oh, okay, interested. And then that was like the Saturday. And then the Sunday, I was in a car with my parents and some family friends, and I had my laptop on my lap, and I was blogging about the experience of having died and how shitty my experience of heaven was.
That sounds like you.
And then I woke up, and it took, and then I actually woke up, and it took me a moment to go, because I thought it was Sunday. Like, it was so, like, I thought I'd had this weekend, and I was like, oh no, the whole thing happened in like the space of, I mean, dreams I think are fascinating, because like they can happen in the space of half an hour, and you think they've lasted, you know, days. And it was just, I thought it was fascinating.
That is fascinating.
I mean, you know, we can definitely read some shit into that, but like,
can I ask you a couple questions?
Yeah, please.
You're familiar with I can't remember the term now. I want to say anesthesia, but that's not the right word.
The vision. Yes, the inability to visualize things.
It's like, you know, like everything, it's a spectrum from like highly detailed internal vision to you just can't picture something at all, and there's a middle ground, it's fuzzy or simple or whatever. Where would you put yourself in generally on that spectrum? Do you know?
Well, that's the thing, because my dreams are vivid as hell.
That's what I was gonna. Okay, I was gonna get to. It's like, can you see clearly in your dream?
Yeah, like totally, like. My memory of like I can I knew I was in this like really sort of white void, and there was grass around, and there was all that kind of stuff. I remember when I woke, when I quote unquote woke up, I was in my old like a house that my parents moved three times out of, like, as in, you know, they've moved three times since. And it was my, you know, the last time I lived with my parents. And it wasn't even the last room I had when I lived with my parents. And that's the room that I remember waking up in. And that was just normal. Like, because, you know, that's the thing in these dreams.
Well, yeah.
It's just like, well, that's obviously where I've woken up. I can remember being in the car. There were three people in the back seat of the car. I remember all those things. And I can see my laptop and stuff. But if you ask me to close my eyes and visualize an apple, I'm like, I can tell you about an apple. I can say it's got a brown woody stem stalk, and it's red, and it's, you know, glistening on one side, but I'm not seeing that in my mind's
eye. Sure.
But I might have a dream, and then I'll remember, you know.
But you can remember, dream,
but like, you know, if I close my eyes and like picture a thing, not really, no.
Yeah,
and that's the thing I wonder about, because it's like, I don't have that to compare someone else who can like see like a whole thing vividly.
Right.
Like, it's almost like I could mentally like code it, but I'm not actually seeing it.
Sure.
It's like the Matrix.
Yep, for sure.
I don't even see the code.
You talking about the. About the dream reminded me of the end of a Greg Berendt bit where he's talking about dreams, how much he hates when people talking about the dreams.
And
the end is always the same. Unless you die in your sleep, you woke up. I love that bit. So I was curious if there was any relation.
Yeah,
so you remember,
do you have a visual memory like that?
I think I used to more. I think it used to be more vivid. Mm. I could see it more, but now it's a bit, it's like 20 to 30% of a visualization. Mm-hmm. Like I can.
Aphantasia.
Yeah.
Sorry. I think it appeared in my brain. I think.
Yeah, it's a Disney movie, I think.
Yeah.
So I can kind of, but like, as what's interesting to me is I feel like I can visualize something like I walk into a house to remodel it. I'm walking through with the client and we're talking about different options. I'm like, I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
I think conceptually, like I don't think I could actually see it in my mind. Yeah, it's funny. It's like the language is so hard with this to really illustrate get across like what people's experiences are really like on the inside.
Yeah, when I move into a space, I think about like what I could do with it, but I don't necessarily picture like the TV's going to go on the wall here and I'm going to paint the walls this color, I'm going to hang a load of stuff.
Brain's weird.
But yes, so that was a strange one. I find dream like me and my a friend and I years ago when we were kids and we used to sleep over at each other's houses, mm-hmm. We'd talk about our dreams because I think both of us had pretty vivid dreams. The ones I remember tend to be pretty out there. And there's ones that I've had that I remember as a kid, like that are still with me, that just because they're just, you know, they were that sort of scary, sure, or whatever, that they've stuck with, yeah, me. And it's usually the nightmares that stick. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember if I've mentioned before, I have this recurring theme, which is I'm trying to accomplish some sort of task and then something else gets in the way, and then something else will get in the way, and it's like I can never actually get to, and it could be I'm just trying to meet a friend and I've got to meet them for you know a certain time, or I'm sitting down to record with you. And so I'll have a dream where like I'm sitting down to record with you, but then like the microphone will break or the boom arm will break and I won't be able to screw, mm-hmm, like I'll just be screwing it in for edge and it won't screw in, or then something else will break. And it's like, sure, I can never sort of accomplish that. And it changes each time. but it's, that's an odd one.
That's funny.
Yeah, I like dreams. I think they're fun and interesting.
Yeah, I like dreams too. I only have one kind of. It used to be reoccurring. It was reoccurring enough for me to have it seared in my memory, but I don't typically, mm-hmm, have it anymore. But I was, as a child, maybe like 8 or 10, at a, mm-hmm, fish farm. So it was just like rows and rows of docks with reservoirs of water in between. And like you could fish into them to catch like trout or salmon or something. And I know I visited one as a kid. And so I think that's where I got the idea from. Although in my mind, it probably looks way different than in reality.
Yeah.
And then there's this flying dragon that is swooping down and breathing fire down the rows of water. And I think it's going to get to me and I'm like running away from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That was my dream.
Yeah.
That's all you gotta be afraid of.
Yeah, absolutely. I never, like, the things that I was, like, people used to talk about monsters and being, sure, chased by some slavering beast or whatever. Like, all of my fears are all, like, existential terror.
Practical things.
Like,
yeah,
even as a kid, it will be, I turned around and someone screamed and then, like, I saw something sort of move into focus and then that'll be it. Like, oh, there was a tree.
Oh, no.
Like the one that is still seared in my memory, yeah, is and it's one of those where it happened twice in one night, and then the second time it happened, I went and stayed in my parents' room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember how old I was, but I was a bit too old to be, sure, doing that. But you know, scary dreams. And it was to do with a tree, and the memories of being sat in like a how would you describe it, like a sort of swinging wooden bench that like swung into, mm-hmm, an angle, and then it swung towards this big scary tree. And so for me, it's like, it's not the sight of the tree. It's not, but it's just, there is a sense that there is something malevolent or evil in the tree. Mm. And that's like, that's often the thing. Like there could be, I could dream about a person and they could just say a thing, mm-hmm, but there's a menace or there is an evil, there is a something. Sure. It's never like, I see a thing and I'm terrified. It's never that. Yeah. It's always being chased by some kind of invisible existential threat. Like one, the other big recurring dream was And I think a few people have had something like this where this was in the second house ever that I remember living in as a kid. And this is, I was really quite young. And it was this really small house. And I was downstairs looking at the patio window, full-length patio window, and from the like skirting board just down at the patio, the bottom of the floor there, I would like out from under there, I would hear a voice. And I never remember what it says, but I do remember that it was going to count down from 10.
That's scary. Ominous.
And yes. And so the whole dream was 10. Run out of the living 9. Room, out the hallway, up the stairs. 8. And inevitably it would get to 7. Like 4 or 3 and I'd trip I'd stumble and then I'd get into bed at like 2 and then I'd wake up.
Oh, 1.
Yeah. And that I remember happening a few times.
Terrifying.
But the other weird thing I think is fascinating, and I don't know if anyone else has ever experienced this. My dreams will implant false memories of dreams. Yes.
Oh, of dreams.
Oh, so you have this as well? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So my dreams will implant false memories of, well, this is like that other dream that you had. Or this is a callback to this other dream. Remember when you had that? And it's happened to me for years. And it was about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that I was like, oh, no. My brain just invents dreams that I've had and then puts those into the memory. Because and it's hard to explain why I know that. Like, I know that I didn't dream this originally. Okay.
So if you dream a dream and then that makes you think that you dreamed a different dream, didn't you dream that dream as, like, could?
I don't think so. I think my dream implants of that other dream.
I get that, but also it's still a dream, right? So doesn't that? It's not our shared real world. It is in your mind. We think that's how it works. It's still a story only you can tell. And whether it's actually
the storyline in dream time. It's on a tape that I could play, but I haven't played. So it's like it's there.
Yeah.
I can't give you a concrete example now, but I remember years ago dreaming that I had a seahorse toy. And then, like, I remember as a kid, like, I never had a seahorse toy, but I used to have this dream about nostalgia for a seahorse toy.
Sure. I thought you were going to say something different, which has happened to me, which is I've had dreams that I thought were my memories. So I thought it was actually something I actually did in the meat space, and that has gotten me in trouble before. It's like, no, I did that.
No,
I didn't. I dreamt that.
No.
I did that. Oh man.
Yeah. I have a couple of like times where I've daydreamt of something that I am now worried, like, I don't know whether that thing actually, and it's like, it's really low level. Like, it's not important, but it's one of those where, like, because of the way our memories work, because my understanding is whenever we remember something, we are remembering the memory. We're not remembering the thing.
Yes.
So every time you keep going over it, you're sort of taping over it, over the memory. And so each time you're remembering the memory of the memory of the memory. Mm-hmm. And so I think you can get to a point where if you I remember imagining a particular reaction to something that someone said, and now I think I made it up, but I can't be certain because, it's like I think maybe that I imagined that, but I don't know. It could go either way because I've thought of it so often that it's like it's now baked in. Because the brain don't know.
Yeah, that's really complicated. It's like, I've had the thought, maybe I shouldn't try to recall my memory because then I'm just remembering the memory and I'm diluting it. I'm taping over the tape. So I just got to store that later and I'll access it when I need it. So hopefully it's more accurate.
I don't want to wear it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to wear this memory
can
out.
Can I bring up one more thing that really annoyed me about that guy?
Yes.
He would do this thing.
So much for the palate cleanser.
Where he... No, it did. I'm laughing and smiling. I'm happy. And now I can relay this memory without as much trauma. He would do this thing where he would... he'd be doing something in a way that was frustrating or annoying or wrong. as noted before, like tools on ladders. And or something even as simple as not putting the little container, the dosing cup, back in its proper spot in the coffee grinder and just leaving it on the counter. So that when the next person goes to use the coffee grinder, coffee grounds get everywhere on, and they're not collected. So there's a big range of from dangerous to trivial,
inconvenient.
Yeah. But I would be like, hey man, next time, can you make sure that you just put the dosing cup back where it's supposed to be? It's just got one spot, so we can just always go right back there. It never needs to sit on the counter. It can always go into its spot. And he's like, oh, I was just going to do that.
Yes.
Or I'd be like, hey, man, can you clean up your tools here and sweep up? This area is getting really dirty, at the job site or whatever. And I'd like us to keep a clean and tidy work site as we're working. He's like, oh, yeah, I was just about to do that. No, you fucking weren't. It's been like this for days. You've been doing it wrong this entire time. And I've told you about this before, and you didn't do it then, and you're not doing it now. So don't fucking lie to me. Just do it and say, yeah, I will try to remember that for next time. You motherfucker. And as always, choose to be a new person. God damn it. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Go Hawks!
I was debating between two. One that was directly at him, which I know he's not going to listen, but yeah, I went with that one.